then
all
it
right.
does have flavor.
But if we're
if
recording.
It's like rubbing alcohol. Yeah. Oh, are we on?
Are we on?
We are classically going to begin every show with nice. That. welcome to Bondcast, James Bondcast, the only podcast where three guys talk about their love for James Bond. Oh, we forgot to turn the air conditioner off. All right. Get ready to sweat, go. Boys. Bondcast, James Bondcast, is the only podcast where we will be counting down month by month, ultimately to the release of the new 25th James Bond film. In order for us to do that, we'll be reviewing a James Bond movie in chronological order once a month. This is our second episode. We've done Dr. No. And now we'll be doing From Russia with Love. My name is Matt McGregor, and I'm here with my two co-hosts. Introduce yourselves.
Harris McCabe.
Hello, I'm Colin Shaw.
Say a little something about your day or about this movie, leading up to this movie.
I'm just happy to be here and watching Colin fondle his mic and cause all sorts of interference.
Yeah, that's my bad. You were like... going like this.
Yeah, but I felt like I wasn't tapping. Doing that.
voice you hear is Chris, our lovely producer.
When Chris did that gesture, Colin was like, am I supposed to do that? Am I supposed to finger my mic like that?
It was a little confusing.
I didn't know the right gesture for it, but hold on to it tight, buddy.
All right.
I'm going to put the mic down because I am making martinis for everyone. I came prepared today, and I hope you guys all enjoy your gin and vodka martinis. But I'm gonna pass the mic to you guys while I shake this.
Yeah,
up.
Do you want to do corrections on last week's episodes or talk?
Well,
about
we could
things?
Talk about a couple of things. The ones that we have corrections for. What various stupid things do we say that need?
Well,
to be corrected?
There was the MI7 instead of MI6 was the first thing.
So yeah, we sort of resolved that, sort of semi-resolved that. So it was called MI7. I don't know why they called it MI7, but that changed after Dr. No. So in all the future James Bond movies, they called it MI6, which is a real thing. It's a real spy agency.
It is a real thing. I looked it up.
It's possible that they called it MI7 because they didn't want to get in trouble with the real MI6 or something. That's what I would imagine. Yeah. But like, I have no idea if that's true or not. But you know, it was a big hit with all those with the every like military secret service. All those people love James Bond movies. So I have a feeling that after the first movie was such a huge hit, it wasn't a problem.
You just went for it. Yeah. So what about Matt's depiction of the three blind mice?
Yeah. Matt called them African-Americans when they are, in fact, Jamaicans.
Just
Jamaicans.
Jamaican-Jamaicans.
Just Jamaican-Jamaican. Jamaican.
Yeah. I'm sorry to all the African-Americans out there.
Hey, you're Jamaican them crazy.
Oh, totally.
What else we got?
So we got a couple of...
Shake it up.
Shake it, not stir.
Hear that, everyone? We're getting drunk.
The podcast can only get better from here.
So we had a couple of names in running for best name. Puss Feller and Honey Rider. So we'll see if we get any better names than that. I don't know if you guys
so
have predictions, because you guys
are
really pumped on Puss
Feller. There's nothing but great names in the Bond series, but I got to tell you, Puss Feller...
That was a good one.
It's one that you don't really think about. It's not an obvious one.
Yeah.
It is incredible, though. It is a real piece of work.
Cool. Did you... the pronunciation of...
Yes. We've learned that broccoli is actually pronounced broccoli. It's not broccoli
or
anything else. Albert Broccoli's name is pronounced like the vegetable. And also, this is interesting, his family was from New Jersey, where they owned, wait for it, a broccoli farm. That's right.
The garden
and state. And they traced their lineage back to Italy, where an Italian family actually invented broccoli.
Oh, cool.
So,
sick.
Yeah.
How do you invent broccoli?
Apparently it didn't exist. It's a combination of like cauliflower and some other kind of vegetables. It's vegetable science.
Have you ever had broccoli?
4-H, dude. 4-H.
It's like broccoli cauliflower. And like, it's cool.
Stop making
it
relatable.
Good talk, guys.
Moving on.
All right. Did you guys want to talk about the gun debate, the PPK Beretta? We talked about that a little bit. Anything with there or the topple missiles while we're on the subject of weapons?
I don't have any new news on PPKs or Berettas. I don't know about topple missiles either.
Toppling missiles.
We did not do our homework. We did not do all our homework this week.
So if anybody happens to be listening and has any influence on this show, where can they reach us?
We're going to provide an email address at the end of the show.
Can we do it now or no? I got to wait.
We got to wait. We got to make them wait. We can't give it away in the beginning.
Okay.
Or we can just pause for a second and then cut it in later using the power of technology.
I'm not cutting anything.
This is a no-cut show.
No-cut show. All right. The last thing is the Connery tattoo. Did anybody do homework on that?
I saw some cool pictures of it. I don't know what it is. It's enormous and black, and it's all over his forearm.
That's
what
she said.
It's enormous and black.
And it's all over my forearm.
All right, so this week...
We're off to a great start.
What movie are we doing, Matt?
Well, before we get into that, there's something I want to bring up. For those three people who listen to the show, you might have actually heard our lovely intro and outro music, which was a nice little trap beat that I have to give kudos to Chris for putting that together. And like, I don't even know how long that took you to make. But great
if job. It was anything under like 8 hours, it's incredible.
I think it took like 35 minutes.
That you're nice. A genius.
And I'm hoping that you think I'm a fool right now for saying this, because you've heard not one, but two unique beats, right? Because having listened to the second show, are you making a new one? Do you plan on doing a new one for every episode?
No, I mean, I could. You guys saw that picture of the vinyl I found, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know. When I would go to thrift stores, I would just dig through stuff and be like, oh, Star Wars, that's cool, or James Bond. It would just happen to be that I have Russia with Love, so I guess I have to now.
I like to have a signature song, but I also like the idea of having lots of songs.
Yeah, maybe we can have like a midpoint
the
song.
Outro could always be like the first one that you did, and then like the intro can be something different every time.
Sure, or the other way.
Okay. Or the Either other way. Yeah.
What do you want?
Oh, I mean... I really was hoping you didn't ask, and I think you should, you know, like just like emphasize your own creative freedom and just think about the way music can be incorporated into not just like, you know, production, but
you're
life
allowed to have opinions on the show.
Thank you for waffling, Colin. That's enough of that.
Okay, let's get into it. So the movie we're doing, 1963, A Beautiful Year, from Russia with Love. The second James Bond outing. Same director, I believe. Terrence Young.
Yes, Terrence Young's back again.
He's back again.
He would take Goldfinger off. But
however, like the rest of the crew, I notice, is different. It's different production designer.
There's a couple of reasons for that. But yeah, the production designer, Ken Adams, didn't come back because he was, as we said last week, working on Dr. Strangelove with Stanley Kubrick, which the Dr. No job got him that gig.
He loves doctor films.
Yeah. he only wanted to do doctor films. That was going to be his thing. But he ended up coming back and being the longtime James Bond production designer on many other things.
Famously.
And... Sid Kane is the Bond art director. There's no credited production designer that I could find on From Russia with Love, but the production design was spectacular once again. So, you know, Sid Kane is the art director. Maybe we give him some props here for that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Colin, what are your thoughts?
I mean, like, some of my favorite sets are like, you know, they're in Hagia Sophia. That's, you know, that's not really production designed. It's just like that.
That's why they didn't have a credited production designer. They just showed up and they're like, "Yeah, this will do.
This looks about like what we wanted it to look like."
Yeah, they're like, "Hey, instead of making a crazy set, why don't we just shoot in some crazy looking place?" There you go.
So you're saying this ancient wonder of the world looks like what you want it to look like? That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the train, it's like, how much production design can you do inside a train car? Mm. It probably looked like that when they booked it, you know, like, we need a train car. It looks like this. Oh, that's perfect.
They just bought like 30 tickets for the train. They're like, you're not planning on shooting a movie on this train, are you?
That's right. They did it guerrilla style. It might be an important time, since we're mentioning them doing it guerrilla style, to note that the budget doubled between Dr. No and From Russia with Love. I don't remember what Dr. No's budget was, but I know this is twice as much. I think it was like $1 million or something like that. I think this was $2 million.
Which in 1963,
this one was $2 million.
It's inflated to $75 billion.
Yes, this was one of the most expensive movies. That's not true, but yeah. So the first one was a huge hit, and it led to more confidence. They had like a 3-picture deal, I think, to make these movies. So they were going to make a sequel anyways. But after the first one was a big hit, they sort of doubled up and reinvested in this one.
Cool. Let's get right into it. So the movie opens with the famous gun barrel sequence where, you know, we're looking through the gun barrel. James Bond walks into frame, turns and shoots at us, the audience, and blood drips down and mm-hmm. we die. I don't believe Dr. No had one.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it did.
It did?
Yeah.
We didn't talk about it.
In fact, Dr. No had one, and it's the same guy in all those things, and the guy is not Connery. It's actually his yeah. one of the stuntmen, which is why it doesn't really look like Connery.
He's wearing a hat, right?
Yeah, he wears a hat in the early ones, and then he doesn't wear a hat later.
And he's shorter and a little bit thicker, and he just doesn't move like Connery's a very graceful, tall guy, and you can tell by that, like, in that opening thing that it's not really... You know, it just doesn't look like Connery. But they had a stuntman. It was basically a pickup shot that they shot later. So they didn't use Connery for it.
Oh,
but,
Mr. Connery, we need you to come back and shoot this gun barrel sequence. What do you think of that?
Fuck off, $1 million.
I'm busy.
I'm drowning and pushy. Leave me alone.
I'm a bit busy that day.
We didn't tell you what day.
I'm busy that day.
Busy all the days.
I'm busy a lot of days.
It's all over my forearm.
How did you get my number?
How did you find me?
Yeah, so we got the gun barrel sequence, and then we go right into the
cold open.
The cold open, and we didn't see Connery for a long time in the first one in Dr. No. We see him immediately here. Though technically, it's Connery, but it's not James Bond.
Can I just say this is probably one of the stupidest cold opens?
Oh, it's dumb for so many reasons. Like, what is this? Like, this is like Spectre LARPing.
To set it up. We see Sean Connery. He's running around like a hedge maze or like a garden.
Yeah, it's like some kind of garden palace.
And there's a guy, like, kind of, it looks like they're looking for each other. And the first guy to find the other is going to kill
him.
Big,
intimidating blonde guy's stalking him.
Right. So he eventually finds him and he chokes him out with
he's got a garrote that's in his watch.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he falls down dead.
Fancy spy gadget.
And suddenly all these lights turn on and it's revealed that they're in like a lavish garden backyard of a giant mansion. And
I have so many questions.
Compound.
I got so many questions about this. Like,
on Spectre Island.
Who volunteers to play James Bond in this exercise?
Right.
Because, like, they actually kill the motherfucker.
They pull a mask off. The reveal is that it's a mask. It's not really James Bond. It's a guy wearing a James Bond mask. So, in essence, they're training these guys to kill James Bond.
By actually having them murder people. And that, I've got another question. Like, are they having them murder, like, talented agents to really test their skills? In which case, why are they killing other good agents? And if they're then what's the point? Because they're just having a murder, like,
the mask is like a psychological thing. It's like, we need to get this guy constantly killing, but we also need him to know, like, who he's going to be killing in the end.
Because they have, like, a super realistic mask for the stupid exercise that they do in the dark. You know?
Which leads me to another question that's always bothered me. Like, James Bond is a spy. But yet, everyone knows who he is.
It's because every time he walks into any room, he's like, Bond, James Bond. Yeah, my room, it's James Bond. James Bond, secret agent's room.
I feel like the man on the street doesn't know who he is. It's just people in the community.
I feel like if you're on the street and you're James Bond, you probably do, because he's yelling at everybody. It's really not a smart spy play.
No, he's like running by with like bullets flying around and, you know, stuff like that. So you know he's somebody that's like, you know, either killing or going to be
important,
killed.
Important, yes. Important.
Yeah. I would say, like, the silver lining on this opening is that it only gets better from here, I think, right?
It established the traditional, like, pre-credit sequence.
Yeah.
Which I believe this was actually supposed to take place later in the film. I read that it was supposed to be in a later portion of the film, and they actually decided to use it as the open, as a cold open, because they didn't have a cold open in Dr. No. Did they have a cold open in Dr. No?
No, they do just the, they did the
yeah,
bullet
they did the
thing,
barrel, and then they did the
and then they did
sequence,
credit roll.
And then the three blind mice. The credits. Got it. Yeah. So this is the first time they did the cold open, which became like a huge James Bond staple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into the title sequence. There is no song, right? Or what is the song?
There is no song. Well, the song is like an instrumental.
But is it the From Russia with Love?
No, it's not. Because that song sucks, as we will find out later. It's a terrible, terrible fucking song. But it's the title sequences by Robert Brown John, who did several of them. And he had this idea. It was actually from a modern artist was doing a lot with like projecting film on things. And he had this idea to project film on women's body parts. So he's actually got clips from the movie, the titles, the clips from the movie are the next one. The titles are projected onto women's body parts of these belly dancers at the beginning over a song that is just sort of...
I got to interject. Yeah. So last week you were talking about watching with your parents, or your dad said it was like a rite of passage thing.
Yeah.
Is this that moment when you started seeing...
No,
was this your
first
boner?
No, there's way dirtier ones than this, because these belly dancers are actually wearing clothing. Whereas later on in the James Bond movies, and these are all like PG like rated movies, most of them. And I don't know if they ever got to like PG-13.
I think there's one where you straight up see nipples.
You see nipples. Like, there's like, if you're watching these opening title sequences, there's naked ladies in them. Not this one, but eventually.
I think it's like Spy Who Loved Me or For Your Eyes Only. One of those like has
some real nudity. There's some real coming of age, grown up boy moments.
Well, obviously the rating system is not the same today as it was in 1963.
This is rated Q.
Is that true?
No.
Oh, I would have believed you. You could have convinced me.
I mean, you used to be able to get away with a boob flash in a PG movie. I remember like one of the guys has, she flashes her boobs at the end of that one. Well, and that was like a PG movie, I think.
Well, even now, isn't there like a different precedent set on violence versus sexuality or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. Violence gets a lot more rope than sexuality. Like nudity generally is like, has been a little harsher.
Like automatic R or something.
Yeah,
eventually
they got there where they're just like, no, it's, if you see boobs, it's an R.
So we should find out when that happened, but let's continue.
Yeah, so the only thing I want to say about the title sequence is like the theme I got of it from it was gypsies. There's going to be a gypsy element in this movie, right?
And was there ever.
So my next note here is about the chess game. I don't know if I'm skipping scenes.
I like that scene.
Yeah. No, I was, that's my next one too. I mean, just the production design, that room is amazing.
It's like a giant chess on the wall, right?
You jump into an international chess championship, and it is this fantastic, huge room full of people, and there's a huge chessboard on the wall so everyone can see, the audience can see what the chess masters are doing. There's a chessboard on the floor. There's these huge marble columns. It's fucking dope.
I mean, just think about the words like upscale Venetian chess stadium.
Then picturing what this
you
is.
You know, like, you're gonna like it.
It's probably the coolest set in the movie, I would venture to say.
Yeah. And it's they use the budget well, because you know, like the last one, they only had two locations, and that's part of why they chose that movie. This one has more locations, but they take you to Venice in the very beginning. And then you end in Venice, so it separates out the fact that they only had like one other place, but it seems like you're going more places. You know?
Right. Yeah, and there's the location shooting was fantastic throughout, and I will gush about it every time we mention another great location. But this was the first one that I was like, right off the bat, I was like, wow, this looks great. This is a great set.
So yeah, so the guys playing chess are, well, the one guy is Kronstein, who is the... He's a
number
Spectre.
Five.
He's number five.
Spectre agent, yeah. And he looks kind of like...
he just looks evil.
He looks like Buster Keaton. He looks like an evil Buster Keaton. Yes. And he's got a funny little accent. He's very full of himself. And then he immediately goes and meets... After the chess game, he gets summoned to meet Blofeld.
Spectre number one.
Yeah, Spectre number one.
Who we don't see. We don't see his face.
We don't see
just
his face.
Just the kitty cat.
Just that he pets a white.
Just the cat. Petting the cat, which will become a signature, and we also meet Rosa Klebb, who is
number three.
Yeah, number three.
Right.
She's an ex KGB agent, and she was parodied in Austin Powers. She's very like a common Bond trope. She's played here by Lottie Lenya, and if that name sounds familiar, it's because she gets name checked in the Bobby Darin song "Mac the Knife," partially because her husband was Kurt Weill, the writer who wrote the Threepenny Opera, which the song "Mac the Knife" comes from, but she was also a very famous stage actress.
Her name is mentioned in the song.
Yeah.
Can you sing that line? Do you know it?
Look out, Miss Lottie Lenya and old Lucy Brown.
Wow. Yeah.
Fantastic. So that's thank you.
Yeah. That was great.
So that's Lottie Lenya, and she's. I thought it was really interesting. I don't know if you guys picked this up, but she's not one of those super cool, super confident Bond villains. She's like kind of skeptical of Spectre's plan. She's a little bit icy with her colleagues. It's like a really nuanced, kind of realistic take on the part. And also like between her like creepy touching later on of Tatiana Romanoff and the way she sort of recoils when men touch her, I was getting a really like
lesbian,
kind of not very well hidden lesbian vibe from her, which I thought was really interesting in a movie of this age. I just thought it was a really nuanced, interesting villain, and the performance really lent a lot of depth to a role where you're not expecting that in at this time period in this kind of movie.
Totally. I had the same thought when mainly in the scene when she's touching the other girl. Yeah, that was different and like unexpected for that time period.
Yeah. And we have several scenes where she's like, you don't always see the fear in these people of failure or of like insecurities, like that. You don't see these guys second guessing themselves. They're sure, like Dr. No, he just thought he was a shit all the time. You can tell right from scene one with her, she's like, she's confident in her ability, but she's also terrified that she's like making mistakes or that she's not going to be able to cut
and
it.
And the blonde guy, the assassin from this one,
right.
he looks pretty confident.
He's like a killing machine, right? Yeah.
That's the sense. He's the guy who's training in the beginning.
He's been trained at the Spectre compound for a long time.
We meet him shortly. I think we go right with Rosa Klebb, right, to meet him after
Spectre compound.
Right? He's
having a picnic with like a woman, I guess, that like lives on the Spectre compound.
Spectre Island. That's my next note. Is a thing they verbally call it Spectre Island. They're like, a secret crime organization.
So it's like murder, physically trained, picnic.
Go on a date with the secretary or the picnic. And then she comes and she hits him with the brass knuckles.
Yeah.
And you were going to say that this is a famous actor, but he's unrecognizable. They dyed his hair blonde, so nobody would recognize him.
Right. And I don't know how famous he was at this point, but he's Robert Shaw. Is that his name?
Yeah, Robert Shaw, who is best known as
Colin's
Quint from
father.
Jaws. He's best known as Quint from Jaws. Doesn't look anything like himself. He was I think he was English by nationality, but I think he lived most of his life in Ireland. He was also a novelist.
He's way younger and way less drunk.
Pretty interesting guy. Yeah, and he did have a drinking problem his entire life, which is eventually what killed him.
Yeah.
I would like to take a moment and just point out that this is something I looked up, and I think you guys will find this delightful. His nephew, Scott Shaw, is a multi-hyphenate filmmaker whose IMDb page is a fucking gem. So I just want to tell you, his top films are The Rollerblade 7, Samurai Vampire Bikers from Hell, Guns of El Chupacabra, and Max Hell Frog Warrior. Of course, not only does he write and direct most of these, he also stars in all of them. Even the trailers, are unwatchable. But the best thing about this, they're 4 minutes long and you can't even get through them. The best thing about his IMDb page, and please, everyone go on his IMDb page now.
Looks like
I'm going to show you guys his photos. He has 91 photos on his IMDb page. And they are...
He looks like he has a side job as a James Hetfield impersonator.
Amazing. These are just...
Wow.
Colin, he's definitely related to you. He's got the same hair.
I mean, these are stellar. I think my favorite one is, there's one coming up. There.
Nice.
It's not an actual Gap ad. There's no fucking way. But it's got Gap on it.
But he looks like he could be in a Metallica cover band, right?
It is amazing. There's 91 photos on his IMDb page. I don't know. I suspect these movies are not good. I have to say, he wins the award for greatest IMDb picture gallery ever, though. It's not to be missed. Please, everybody, just take my word for it. You won't regret it.
What was that last one? Something Frog Warrior? Does that mean it's like... similar to the Ninja Turtles, where it's like a mute frog?
I don't think anybody could say. I imagine even people who have watched it would still be in the dark about that. It's fairly incoherent.
This is a good point.
Is a tangent. We got
to
go back.
Yeah. This is a good point in the podcast for me to announce that we'll be transitioning to, what's his name? Scott Shaw.
Scott Shaw.
A Scott Shaw only podcast.
We're reviewing every Scott Shaw movie ever made.
All right, let's see. My next note is punches him with brass knuckles. He flinches slightly. Oh, yeah. So, like, the whole thing is he's supposed to be so tough that she punches him with brass knuckles to test how tough he is. And I actually saw him flinch a little bit. Like, I wish he didn't flinch at all, Like, they really did it. And he was like...
And the entire time I'm thinking, like, you could be really tough and brass knuckles could still break your ribs.
Yeah.
And then your great assassin's out of commission with broken ribs. So maybe not the best test.
She gets off of a helicopter and, like, goes down to Spectre Island, puts the brass knuckles on and just punches this guy in the gut. And then he flinches barely and she's like, yep, that'll do.
Close enough.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, this is not one of my favorites. I'm going to go ahead and say it now. Like, I don't think this is one of the better James Bond films. It has some things, but it...
Well, I think we should table that for the moment because I'm going to have some real issues with that later on.
Okay.
I think we should get into a fight about it later.
All right, but one thing is, like, I don't... The assassin guy, I'm not intimidated by him. at all. Like,
I thought they did.
He is bigger than James Bond, like height wise and width wise. But other than that, he looks like he's like having a little too much fun, but not like
serious enough.
Murder fun.
I thought they did an interesting job of building him up early with making him silent and like proving his strength in all these different ways.
Story wise, yeah.
And once he gets, like, once he starts talking, it's different because he's like, he goes undercover. But we'll, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But I did think like he sort of, he sort of, I think, like pioneered that Bond henchman, strong, silent, you know, intimidating presence. Maybe not the best, but he was one of the first.
I think that's part of the...
We didn't get a good one in Dr. No.
Yeah. But I think that was part of the storytelling. To me, it's like the guy, I don't buy it, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, okay. I guess that. Yeah. That kind of makes sense. I mean, Robert Shaw... He seems like kind of cool. He seems like he would just like kick back and have a couple of beers with you, which he probably would.
How did you feel about like the fighting style in this movie? Like compared to maybe Dr. No, which I thought had like terrible.
Do we want to jump ahead? Because I thought it was pretty good. I thought like a lot of the fights were really good. I thought the action in this movie was pretty good.
Well, what were the fights, the memorable fights in the movie?
They had a great one on the train where it's like they're just going crazy. Going nuts. They had the gypsy girl fight.
Oh, yeah.
They had the whole raid on the gypsy camp, which was... Well, now we're just going...
All right. I think the gypsy camp one is like kind of silly looking.
I thought it was hilarious. Let's just get back to
But they introduce new music in that one, which is cool.
Yeah, let's get back to
the plot. They use that music.
Speaking of new music, the next thing I have is where... A boat is on the river and rowing down the river, and we get our James Bond title music playing on the radio from Russia with Love. It's fucking terrible. I was just like, ugh, now I know why they didn't put it in the opening credits. People would have walked out. And your girl, Sylvia Trench, is back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They're having like a picnic kind of date.
Yeah. James Bond's date from the last movie, Sylvia Trench,
who
stripped naked and hung out in his apartment. Actually managed to corral him in and become his official
date.
Girlfriend. Yeah.
Second for about
date.
A second.
For a second. And then he's off again. And we never see her again. But he probably had her taken care of.
It's like, let's be real.
I've got to break up with this woman. Handle it for me.
Take her down.
I don't see him doing that. but that is funny.
She keeps on calling me. She doesn't understand I'm trying to ghost her.
Oh no. Okay. Yeah, we'll get to the end of the plot. We gotta pick it up though.
Webb is a dyke.
Good notes.
Note taking. Where are we at? Okay, James Bond, he's in London, he's on his second date with Sylvia Trench. He has to leave because he's got government work to do.
And
he goes to see M.
Wait. He says, now about that lunch. And I have, was that an oral sex joke? I'm pretty sure it was.
Probably.
Yes. Yeah.
So then he goes to M headquarters. M tells him there's a Russian agent who fell in love with your photo and is offering the lector.
Shaken, not stirred.
Another drink.
So the lector is like a coding machine, and she has that, and she fell in love with James Bond, and she's a Russian agent. She's like looking to defect.
And we know this is bullshit. We've already seen the other side of this. She's being played by Russia and by Spectre. We get our first Q sighting of the series.
Yes, Q Branch.
Yep. And it's actually Desmond Llewellyn, and he's actually called Q. Mm-hmm. The gadgets are super realistic. They're actually like real shit that seem like they could be real
the
spy
briefcase.
Gadgets. Really, yeah, really sophisticated briefcase.
Attaché.
All these gadgets in it. It's got a dagger in it. It shoots smoke in people's faces.
Smoke bomb.
Has gold hidden in it. All this shit.
The dagger. The little gold coins.
And it carries a machine gun that the whole machine gun fits into the...
It's a sniper rifle.
Yeah, it's a sniper
but it
rifle.
It symbols.
Yeah, and the whole sniper rifle fits into the stock of the gun, which is actually a real gun.
I
didn't know that. I had looked that up. And then we're off and running on our adventure. We go to Istanbul, and there's a lot of like parallels with Dr. No, with like the driver picking him up and they're being tailed and everything.
But we get the first instance of the little exchange where like Agent One says this and Agent Two has to say this. And that means they're agents.
Right. They got a little code word, which comes into play later.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny that this is this sort of was similar to the Dr. No beginning, but it sort of played the other way. It like played on our Dr. No expectations. And it's like, if you're expecting the same movie, we're going to do something different with this one.
Right.
And I'm going to do this every time we get to someplace, but Istanbul is so fucking cinematic and spectacular. It was so much better than Jamaica.
Beautiful, yeah.
The Basilica shot was really cool. The sewers were fucking amazing. I was not expecting to be so impressed by location shooting in a movie this age, but they like knew. Yeah,
that was
they
one
knew
of the
what
strong,
they were doing.
One of the strong points of this one,
yeah.
For sure.
Yep.
Yeah, so then we meet Ali Karimbe, who's the head guy in Istanbul who James Bond has to meet.
We learn that he has 47 sons.
Yeah.
Just got shit tons of sons.
All his entire staff is his sons.
He's a spy guy. He's played by, I think, a Mexican actor. Do we have his name handy? I don't remember the actor's name. Who actually was dying of cancer at this point. They actually front-loaded all his scenes into the movie so he could film before he died. And he died immediately after, but it was,
they didn't make it actually. And they had to use his body in like a weekend. It was like a weekend situation thing, yeah. For half the movie.
His name is Pedro Armendariz.
Well, that can't be Mexican. Pedro.
Pedro.
Oh, okay.
You said he was Mexican.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Maybe,
unless there's a different Pedro
movie. But he's playing I don't know what nationality he's playing.
Turkish. Yeah.
Okay. Turkish.
Istanbul's in Turkey.
Well, I get that, but that doesn't mean it's full of.
They even specify that the place he goes to is called Station T.
Oh, for Turkey?
I would assume so, yes.
Okay.
All right. So let's get to the meat of this story here. So Bond connects with Karen Bay, and they team up. And what's the girl's name? Have we gotten to her?
Not yet. I don't think so.
Tanya?
Tatiana
Romanova.
Tatiana. But then he starts calling her Tanya.
But she's later on, because she's like not revealing herself yet. First, they got to go to the gypsy camp. We can't leave out the gypsy camp shit. We got to get to the gypsy camp.
But they're talking about her at this point, because once he gets to Ali Karimbe, Karimbe is exceptionally creepy. How into this whole thing he is? Like,
he enjoys being a spy guy.
Like, I'm more than that. He enjoys setting up sexual rendezvous.
He's totally into that too. Yeah. Yes, you don't think he's got 100 sons for a reason.
It's super creepy.
It's all over my forearm.
Oh god.
So they're aware that Spectre is trying to get the Lecter machine, right? That's the whole thing. They want this Lecter coding machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they kind of want it for themselves. So they're like, if Spectre's going to help. Spectre's going to use us to get this Lecter machine. We'll use them to get the Lecter machine because we know what's up. The next thing I have is the gypsy camp because they try to lose their Russian tails.
So Russia bombs their place, and then that's because Spectre wants there to be a conflict between them. But then they say, well, it's not safe here, so we got to go run and hide. And he's like, let's go to this gypsy camp, which is, I think, over the top stereotypical.
Oh yeah, it's
too stereotypical. Like
what I thought was like, it's interesting because the James Bond movies are all this kind of, exploration of exotic locales and different cultures,
mm-hmm,
but it's always through these many layers of very Western Caucasian viewpoints. So it's like we're seeing this exotic gypsy culture, which has probably some tangential similarities to actual gypsy culture, but we're seeing it in the most like cartoonish way possible.
Every from the little caravans to like their clothes to like everything they're doing.
Yep.
Yeah. It's these two women. They get to the gypsy camp and what's going on there, like they don't stop for James Bond. He comes right in the middle of a fight that's about to happen that the whole camp is excited about.
Which Ali Karimbe is also really into, like getting Bond to watch the fight between
girl
the two
on girl
women.
Fight. Yeah,
these two girls are in love with the same guy, and like they're gonna fight ostensibly to the death.
Which to me, that's one of the things where like, okay, like this movie is like, we're not like really on track anymore. We're just like, we're here to watch a girl fight now. Like as an audience,
I feel like a lot of James Bond movies have this section in the middle of the movie where this thing sort of happens, where you kind of forget what the plot is, especially in these early movies.
Oh yeah. They're like at a fancy dinner and they're having fun and they're like enjoying themselves. And it's like, wait, weren't you on the run because your embassy got bombed and you're like supposed to be on guard and you're trying to lose your Russian tails. Yeah. But it's a whole, so it's this whole segment. And honestly, that's like, there's like the belly dance thing where all yeah. the, so unbeknownst to them, what Kurumbay calls Bulgars are
Bulgarians,
the anti-gypsies. And I don't know that it's actually a synonym for Bulgarians, because Bulgars were a semi-nomadic Turkish warrior sect that actually founded Bulgaria, but a lot of them were Slavicized and became sort of, you know, more like Westernized and founded stable states. And a lot of them stayed like what these Bulgars are in the movie, which are very similar to like gypsies, except with right. leather jackets.
That's one of the weird things about watching this movie, though, is like later on as they start to go back west, he goes through a whole area where the political boundaries are entirely different at right. this point in time from then.
Right. But it's, at any rate, these guys are all behind the scenes setting up their ambush. Yeah. And meanwhile, we're watching belly dancers and girl fights. And it's really kind of an excruciatingly long sequence where nothing happens. And then you get this amazing, hilarious shootout.
The music?
No, the music is fun.
I like that song.
But it's, yeah, so it's a catchy tune. But you get this ridiculous fight where Bond sort of, like, you have these guys like machine gunning each other and stabbing each other and shit. And Bond's just sort of wandering through the camp with a sword, like just sort of fucking with people, but not in any sort of really productive way, like in a haphazard way. Like he'll cut something and a tent will collapse on a bunch of guys, or he'll just cut loose a flaming wagon and it'll hit a bunch of people. But like, they could be gypsies, they could be Bulgars. He doesn't give a shit. He's just kind of yeah. making a mess and being like, yeah, fuck it. I got a sword. I'm James Bond. Nobody's going to fuck with me.
They're all foreigners to me.
I mean, oh God. I mean, to me, this sequence looks like they got everybody together and they flipped on the lights and they're like, okay, now everybody run around crazy. We're rolling.
Yeah. Some of you need to be on fire here.
Yeah.
So I want to recap. So there was...
Chris, did you watch this movie?
Hell no. So there was... This is the second time there was yellow face in the first movie.
Right.
And now this is the second time where they're kind of like crossing the line in terms of like racial...
Yeah, they got Mexicans to play Turkish people.
This is also...
I mean, okay, at least that's like... at least Mexican is like another person of color. It's not like... They could add these people...
It's close, but I mean, I shouldn't even say it's close. It's maybe the same color family.
Right.
But it's completely...
It's not that close. Yes, no.
Latin America, and it's something totally different.
Exactly.
So totally different. I want to note that they're not doing a super good job so far.
Right.
And this is the first... They're also very...
Okay, this is one of the things I don't like about the movie. If you were to argue that you didn't like James Bond because you felt like it was thematically sexist,
right?
You would use this movie.
Okay.
Oh, I would use Goldfinger. but we'll get to that.
I would say this movie before Goldfinger.
Because
it has more objectification in a very like the two girls, the two gypsy girls fighting over each other are very much not human characters. They're like... A spectacle.
I would argue that Rosa Klebb is one of the more like sort of empowered, independent women in the canon of James Bond movies.
That's a good argument.
And also Tatiana Romanoff ends up...
Thank you.
I didn't even hear what he said.
She's a dyke.
Oh, God.
Did you hear that in
fact? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but and I think that could be kind of progressive too. Although she is a bad guy, I think.
Okay, but was it progressive or was it like it'd just be hot if chicks fight and we make chick on chick action?
Well, that's exactly the motive. The girl fight is totally. It would be hot. Although that's an intense fucking fight. Like they're like yeah. it is not that sexy. It is really fucking. They're fucking with
each
other.
Their claws are out.
Yeah, they're like
they're just hurting each other.
They're just pulling each other's hair.
They're flipping each other into shit, and they're throwing each other around, and they're beating the hell out of each other. It's not like there's probably a really sexy way to shoot a girl fight. This is not it. This is like they're scantily clad, but they're
not like
they're
fighting oiled up in little kitty.
No, that's not it at all.
And there is the whole thing of like Ali Kurumbay comes across very much like, oh, the culture is different here. You know, like, and
but
he's
you said
trying
he's a little
to tell
perverted
that to
anyways,
Bond,
though, right?
What
you said? He's a little perverted, anyways, right?
Yeah, he seems like a pervert to me.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
that's my read.
Well, let's flash forward to after the fight where the gypsies win, and Bond, because he fought so heroically in this fight,
they're both into him.
He gets to decide who gets to marry the chief's son, and both women spend the night. They go into the tent with him. And he says, oh, I'm going to have to figure out which one
that?
Of you. Yeah. Oh, it's,
he gets to decide by having sex with both of them.
I don't know if that's stated out overtly, but it is implied.
It's heavily yes. implied.
So what's... Okay, here's a new segment. What's What's his girl count at this point?
Ooh. Well, Sylvia Trench.
Sylvia Trench.
We got to assume the two gypsy girls.
Two, three. That's it?
That's it so
you
far.
You only slayed one in the first movie?
We're like a third of the way through the movie. So
yeah, we're in the middle still. Yeah. So we need. He goes, after they go kill some Russian guy, he helps Ali Karimbe kill a Russian guy.
Who climbs out of a... this is great too. So he climbs out of a woman's mouth on a poster on the side...
A billboard.
Like, on a billboard on the side of his building. He climbs out of her mouth. He's got a secret escape hatch on the side of her, on the side of this building that is in this actress's mouth on this enormous billboard. And after they shoot him, James Bond quips... She should have kept her mouth shut.
That's right.
Which I can only imagine wasn't the first or last time Connery said that.
Okay, so then he has the rendezvous with Tatiana.
He finally
waiting in his room
Natalia,
in his bed.
Natalia Romanoff.
Tatiana. It says Tatiana here.
Tatiana. Oh, is it Tatiana?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he calls her Tanya.
Tanya.
He just gives up.
He just gives her.
No, it's like a nickname.
He couldn't pronounce Tatiana.
It's too far.
It's not a nickname.
It's too many syllables.
He just couldn't do it.
I give Bond so much more credit than both of you. he's like a real good guy in my like in my subjectivity when I watch the movies. He's like much better than what you guys think he is.
I just think of SNL Connery. That's all
you
I
saw
think
Goldfinger,
of.
Right? We'll get
yeah,
to that.
All yeah.
Right.
Well, that's
we're gonna watch that so, next so month. Not, Harris.
Yeah. Next month, yes. Yeah. We'll be talking about
definitely
that next
not
month.
Already.
There'll be anticipation.
More amazing locations. We get more amazing locations. All the locations are great.
My notes stopped here because apparently I was too into the plot. I was gripped by the
story. So Matt fell asleep at this point in the movie. but one of the interesting things that we have is that Robert Shaw's character, Grant, has been helping Bond. He shot a guy that was going to kill him at the gypsy camp. He helps him again now, always like secretly, but he's always doing these things to help him. And we're wondering, why is that? Because we expect him to be like the enemy that's trying to assassinate Bond, but he's actually helping him because he wants him to get this Lecter device. So now... Bond and what's her name? Tanya.
Tatiana.
I can't remember that many syllables. We're gonna call her Tanya. Bomb the Russian embassy and steal Electra device. And I wish I had a clip of the music that plays when they steal it, but it's like standard Bond music. But it's like the super staccato horn beats. It's not the regular James Bond theme. It's like the theme they play for certain intense action moments.
Is it
the extra loud one? For lack of a better description.
It's like dun 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 dun.
Yeah, yeah,
dun,
that's. That's the one. That's
no, that's the one. That's the one when they come into the gypsy camp.
That's the one. That is totally
they
the
use
one.
It twice,
and,
right?
And I think they use it anytime anything awesome happens. But it's like a super like underrated music cue that comes
so
through a lot of
that
Bond
one.
Music.
Yeah,
we'll have to cue them
all
up
right,
because
find
it's fun. And then they steal the Lecter device and they hop on the Orient Express, which was a normal passenger train. Goes through Europe, goes from Istanbul to Paris, and was famous in a lot of literature. It was supposed to be a normal passenger train.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a murder on this
was
train.
Was there? Yeah, there was. It was supposed to be a normal passenger train, but because it visited all these luxury locations, it became known as this luxury thing, and they sort of upgraded the train and made it this whole big deal, and it was like... In literature, it became like a great setting for stuff because it was sort of, it had a lot of exotic, you know, you could go to these exotic locales. A lot of famous, you know, rich people went on it. It was a key element of Bram Stoker's Dracula. Graham Greene wrote a very famous, actually, I think two famous novels about it. And of course, Agatha Christie wrote The Murder on the Orient Express, which was made into a movie in the 70s and is going to be out again soon.
Like next month or something.
Which I think is interesting, but it does, I feel like it was probably more interesting when it came out. People,
what the train?
Like just you know the
train
exotic train travel.
Now.
Exotic train travel doesn't have the appeal in the current American market. It probably
I have to
did
say,
then.
Exotic train travel sounds awful in the current American market. I think that's a little unfair to the.
Well, it
the
is unfair. Then, it's unfair. It's just I'm just saying that's the way it is. Like. We should all be able to celebrate exotic train travel.
So let's just get so Colin's
also can that be
so
our
Colin's
band name?
Opinion, Colin's opinion on From Russia with Love is that it's not very evergreen. It's definitely of the moment. It's not aging well for you.
It also has like
because of the trains. Got it.
So what else happens in the movie?
I have so many problems with it.
That's pretty much it.
That's it.
The rest of the movie takes place on the train.
It has too many endings. It's like it's very much Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. It's So
just keeps resolving.
So on the train, we have our like super assassin, the big tall blonde
we're
guy.
In like we're in like the second Uh-oh. Act now.
Karen Bay gets killed off screen.
Yes, Karen Bay gets killed. Like Quarrel before him, and like so many James Bond sidekicks. Poor Bond sidekicks.
There's no Felix you know, in this movie,
but that's
right?
What. But
no.
That is one of that's one of the interesting things about the Bond sidekicks is they have to die for like because. You can't kill Bond, so the only reason, the only way to increase like the dramatic tension in the movie is to kill off another important character. Yep. And those important characters are always either the love interest or the sidekick, and often both. So these people die a lot in these Bond movies because basically because James Bond is invincible, everyone else has to get killed.
Yeah,
makes sense to me.
It's sad, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, they have the epic train fight. Grant catches him and he knocks the girl out. Right, he drugs her.
Drugs yes. her first.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they have this fight. Oh, we forgot to set up at Q. When he meets with Q, he gets given a briefcase that has... Oh,
no, we said that. We talked about that. Oh, you, okay. you were shaking a martini. Oh, yeah, sure. There's a great shot. My favorite shot in the movie is when Bond gets off the train to look for his connection and Grant follows him. It's where he hears the password that they had established earlier.
Yeah.
And it's this great shot of like Grant walking in the train behind him, sort of mirroring Bond exactly as Bond walks in the train on the platform. It's a pretty cool shot. And it's like fun because we still haven't heard Grant talk. Like he's still this intimidating,
looming
secret
in the background.
Blonde bad guy looming in the background who just like pops up in the window and is just following Bond and he hears the secret message.
Yeah. Which is you go up to the guy and you're like, do you have a lighter? And they're like, I prefer a match. And then you know, you go from there or whatever.
So if anybody ever asks you that and you want to get into some intrigue.
So if Grant bumps into him.
Yeah, bumps into him and he hasn't noticed this giant blonde guy who happens to be everywhere he's been for the last like 3 weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
And he puts on a fake accent, right?
Yes. Yeah. Very posh. It's Robert
which also,
Shaw.
Yeah, which also makes him sound not intimidating.
Yes. Right. And that's and that's the thing with Threw Colin Off. I think that's more intimidating because I think he's like undercover there. He's like, no,
it's,
I'm just
a little creepy.
I'm just a witty British guy. Oh God, look at my accent. And he's like really this
good
guy.
Good evening,
who...
Mr. Bond. Yeah.
Also, I thought it was interesting, and I don't know if you guys
hello,
caught this.
Chap.
Robert Shaw is about 5 inches shorter than Sean Connery.
Really?
And they did so many crazy things to hide that fact. Like they always had him sort of entering first and they had him sit down in the car where Bond stands so they didn't have to be.
Because he looks like close to a foot taller.
Because they're trying to keep him a similar height and he seems bigger, but it's all like how they shot him and how they framed him and stuff like that. I thought it was really cool. They did all these really, really clever stuff at how to hide the fact that he was much shorter than Sean Connery.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yep. Okay. And then so all this happens. He drugs the girl. Bond figures it out. He, you know, beats the shit out of him.
They get into this epic brawl.
Yeah.
Oh, he tricks him with the briefcase, which blows up in
his
face.
Well, Grant gets the best of him, has a gun on him, explains the entire fucking scheme.
Oh, there's kind of a nod to like the can I have a cigarette thing from the first
movie. Right,
exactly.
Yeah. And
also like they're just like he's got a gun on him, like he's beat him, but they're just like hanging out for like a while.
And they do like the talking villain thing where he's like, well, what you see is that Spectre was trying to do this and you fell for a trap, and Bond's like, Spectre, I didn't even know it was Spectre.
Right.
I thought it was like somebody else, and he's like, tell me more.
Still
like, well, I'm gonna kill you, so I'm gonna tell you whatever.
Still in the fake British accent that he's putting on because he killed the British agent to get to pretend
no, doesn't
to be
he change
British.
His voice at some point?
I have no idea. Does. You know, I actually think he might have been a British guy that was recruited by Spectre. I think that might be his backstory because we never heard him talk before this. So that might be his real accent.
I thought no his voice, I seem to remember that it got a little more gruff. You know, he's like,
yeah,
I guess.
But I'll say this. This is one of the things I loved about this. Everything about that spy briefcase paid off. The gold, the gas thing, the knife, the garrote on Grant's watch, everything, they paid it off in the scene. They have this knockdown drag-em-out brawl that was totally badass, and they paid off all these gimmicks that they had set up earlier, which were all like totally satisfying and fun and awesome.
Yeah.
It was a great fight scene.
And then he beats
exclamation point I have in my notes.
And they run away, but... Yes.
He kills him, right?
Yeah, he kills him.
He kills him, yes.
But then the movie is not over.
No.
But it seems over.
So it seems kind of over, although they do get chased around by a helicopter.
Spectre helicopter chases them.
I swear this thing,
then they get in a boat.
Whoa. I frame by frame this helicopter shit.
There's literally a helicopter chase, a boat chase.
See, you thought it was over, and right? You thought the movie was over.
This is all after like the main. But keep in mind that he's like, you know, it's not over because we haven't seen Rosa Klubb again, and she was like the villain.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's
I just thought Rosa Klubb would be like in the next one
because we had a henchman there because you know there's going to be a next one. Just
you're already saying the Rosa Klubb is a really strong character. They should have just carried her over.
So how does it even end?
Okay, after the boat chase.
We got it.
I didn't even get to talk about the helicopter nearly killed Sean Connery. Frame by frame, that shit. It comes within inches of him.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a historical
fact?
Yes,
that is a historical fact. That helicopter was trying to kill Sean Connery.
How does he destroy the helicopter again? I watched this a while ago.
Something stupid. What the hell is it?
Oh, it's like something impossible.
They're trying to drop grenades on him, and he accidentally drops one in the helicopter.
Oh, no, he shoots the guy, and he's about to throw the grenade.
He drops the grenade into the helicopter, and the helicopter almost falls on top of him, but luckily he's hiding near rocks.
Yeah, good old rocks.
So then he's like,
so then they find a boat that's full of big barrels of gasoline.
Oh, and he says, he also says, I'd say one of their aircraft is missing. And this is where I noted that all the From Russia with Love quips, like every single quip is fucking terrible. This is like the least funny James Bond movie ever.
Yes.
And it's not because it's not trying. It's trying to be funny, and it is not. Bad quips.
Okay. So then he gets on a boat, and he starts, going wherever, and suddenly he's being tailed by...
Yeah, they're being tailed by boat chasers, more Spectre agents.
Another nameless and faceless Spectre agent. Who we actually saw, like, teased earlier. Another henchman with a scar on his face is chasing him, because they've just got multiple henchmen now. And that was also really dumb, because they throw the barrels out, and they shoot the barrels, and the barrels explode into flames.
But it also makes it way longer, because they chase him around for a while, then he does the barrel thing, and the barrel thing is, like, set up payoff.
Is this before or after we see Rosa Klubb again?
Well, I think we're forgetting the scene where both Kronstein, the guy from the chess match in the beginning, and Klebb are talking to number one.
So that's an important moment. We go back to this thing where Rosa Klubb and Kronstein are called to number one's
office,
and they have to be in front of him. And the whole time, Kronstein, despite the fact that his plan was shit and totally went to shit, predictably, he's like totally confident. He's like, yes, well, if you people had executed my plan better, the plan was great. You know, and he's not even like defending himself. He's like, I'm totally dope. Rosa Klubb's sweating up a storm because she thinks she's about to get killed. And then
the twist happens
and evil Buster Keaton gets killed, and Rosa Klubb gets told to like
chance.
One more chance to go out there and do this. We don't accept failure.
How does Kronstein get killed?
He gets killed with a poison boot knife. It's a knife that comes out of the toe of the boot, and
if they kick him in the shin,
and seconds later he's dead. It's kind of an interesting moment. And then we get the boat chase that's totally lame. Except there's a great moment. I don't know if you guys noticed this. There is a great moment when a pyrotechnic goes off at the front of one of these boats, which clearly wasn't supposed to, or the stuntmen didn't know about it, and scares the shit out of them. There's a shot where, like, clearly a bunch of flames shoot up in a couple of stuntmen's face, and you could see that there's actual, like, holy shit, I didn't know I was going to get my face burned off here.
No,
it's pretty awesome.
I didn't notice that one.
And so Bond and Tanya, what's her real name?
Tatiana
Romanov. Bond calls her Tanya, so she's Tanya to me. They end up going on their little honeymoon at a phenomenal resort hotel, which if you've seen Austin Powers, you know how this movie ends, because they spoof this pretty hard. But all of a sudden Rosa Klubb shows up, dressed as a maid. They don't notice her as she's like busying herself.
Tatiana notices her, but she doesn't know what to say. She's divided loyalty still at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, exactly. And that's where we kind of get the big payoff at the end, is that Rosa Klubb actually almost kills James Bond, and then Tatiana helps.
She chooses
switches sides.
Him. Yeah.
Exactly.
Actually,
and she shoots Klubb instead of Bond.
And then we get some more shots of beautiful Venice locations. And then we actually finally get our From Russia with Love song to play. And it is just as bad as we suspected it was earlier in the movie.
But they're on the gondola.
Some sweet gondola sex.
Yeah. There's just some sweet back, what is it? They have the back projection.
Yeah, because they're not actually in Venice. I read that. They did shoot in Venice, but Sean Connery and all the principal cast were never
Venice
there.
Again.
I refuse to get in that boat.
Wait, so what's his body count up to now? Not guns, but vaginas.
I think it's only 4.
He's still been 4? With Tatiana the whole time.
So he didn't give a fuck about the other girl dying? He just moved on?
Oh, yeah. He has no heart.
He never gives a fuck about that.
Wait, which girl died?
Or no, not died.
The girl that just left from the beginning.
Oh, yeah, I thought you said you set some girl up from the first movie.
Oh, yeah. You only see her in the first scene.
Yeah, she's only in the first scene.
He ghosted her.
She just stays in London. She's a London socialite or something like that. She kicks it in London most of the time.
I don't think he told her. I think he had somebody else tell her. Like, listen, JB's not into you.
I feel like he couldn't tell her because the government says she's not privileged to that information.
I wonder if she's a character from the books who like shows up periodically and they thought maybe she would be a recurring character. And then
well, it looks like they're trying to keep the continuity.
I think that should be something that we research for next time.
Okay, so we'll figure that out. But is that also the first like social media breakup?
That I don't know that he actually broke up with her through social media, but I feel
they didn't probably have social media then, but he like had somebody like text them and then like
I don't think it was that. I don't think she knows anyone with the British government.
He sent her a message on the Lecter decoder machine.
I think he just disappeared and she's like, no, you guys are giving him. I wonder what happened to James Bond.
I think what happened is
I would ask the government, but they won't tell me.
Oh, I'm way more cynical than both of you. I think he disappeared her. I think he had people. He was like, listen, I would like to change my name and disappear that way, but I can't because I like to yell at everywhere because I'm a secret agent named James Bond. And he was like, you got to take care of this girl because I can't change my name. So you got to, I think MI6 took care of Sylvia Trench.
I don't buy that. I feel like James Bond is like, he really does have feelings for these women. And like,
I think that's what he tells
it's just, about. No.
Okay, so maybe he didn't know, but he was like, listen, you got to get this girl off my back. And they were like, really know one way to do that.
I got to interject. All right, so you never done that to a girl? You never just like gamed up a girl just to like tell her that you care more for her?
Don't make this about me,
actually,
Chris.
No, I'm like, not looking at you.
I think there's a little bit of James Bond in all of us sometimes. And, you know.
Because I know it's like you're like looking up to him as like this squeaky clean guy.
He also is like, to me, he has like borderline like supernatural powers, like because he doesn't actually like say a lot to a lot of these women. So
yeah,
he must have some kind of
that's
like
how you game him up.
Sociopathy isn't a supernatural power.
To me, that means he has some kind of like unreal pheromone where it's like if he walks into a room, his scent actually like changes the whole like room.
His name just carries weight. He knows what he's doing.
But they don't know him. Only people trying to kill him
everybody
know that
knows
he's famous.
How could they not know him? He's
they're
been
all,
telling everybody
all
who he is.
They're watching him from afar damn, I'm on
seriously.
A piece of that Bond action.
Shit. A covert spy just walked into the room, guys. Check it out.
See, no one says that. A covert spy just walked into the room?
They all know who he is.
Because he told everybody. He's like, I'm James Bond, covert spy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Everyone
knows.
Says his name twice, for Christ's sake. Bond, yeah. James Bond. Yeah,
it's all about it.
Because
all right, we're at the end of the movie. All right, so, Bond returning Goldfinger. So let's get down to it.
So how does this
the critical
movie compare
analysis.
To Dr. No? Do you think it's better or worse?
To Dr. me, it's no. worse.
Okay, it's one worse. Word answers, and then we'll get into it. Worse.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to say worse.
Better.
Okay,
oh, you guys
let's
are so
figure
wrong.
This out. Mm. I don't ever watch any of these, so it's up to you guys.
According to the internet, it made more money.
Well, that's, yeah, and also if you read the IMDb page, which I did, and I was like, it's everybody's favorite James Bond movie, like Sean Connery, all these people are like, this is the best James Bond movie. All the people who made the movie and all the subsequent Bond actors, everyone's listing this one as their favorite one, which surprised me. And then I saw it and I was like, I kind of get that. It's like, the thing it doesn't have going for it, shitty song, it's not funny, it's got no good quips. I thought it had, like, honestly, they had the jerk around ending, but you gotta imagine the first time they do that. Thank you. The first time they do that, it's like new. It's kind of like people weren't expecting the Lord of the Rings style ending, and it wasn't that long. I think you guys are anticipating endings before they happen. No. What it did have going for it was like fucking insanely good locations, some really great fight and action scenes, some kind of cheesy ones too, but every Bond movie has that. And some like legitimately kind of cool bad guys, because I thought Robert Shaw was a decent bad guy. I disagree that he was. I get what you're saying about his little posh accent not really being intimidating, but I think in general, for most of the movie, he was an intimidating bad guy. I thought Rosa Klebb was pretty badass and actually kind of nuanced.
I have to disagree on a lot of counts. I think Grant is an instantly forgettable villain, as much as they try to make him like a menacing force.
But he was the first.
Yeah, I'll give you that he was the first, like, sort of secondary villain who is, like, a towering kind of, like, he's the brute force.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I will say that I like Kleb. I think she's good, and obviously she's lampooned in Austin Powers.
She disappeared for most of the movie. I'll grant you that, but
yeah, she's sort of set up as like the end, the coda of the film, if you will.
Which is also sort of a Bond tradition. It's in Casino Royale and a few of the other ones.
I think for as many like cool locations that they went to and probably had a blast like shooting in, we again like don't really see too much like beauty, shots like vistas and things like that. And like while most of it is shot in a train, like think about that. You're shooting inside like a train set, you know, like they built a set. They clearly didn't shoot inside a train.
Let me push back on most of it being shot in a train. It's like the third act at most, and it's not that much of it. It's, you know, they spent like maybe
they're in that train
the
for
train
a long
part feels long.
15
it feels
minutes,
pretty long.
Everything after the train, they get on tops? The train feels long. You know, like the train is long, then the scene with the helicopter is long, then the boat thing is long.
Well,
and then it's like, oh,
I get how
is
the
it gonna end?
I get how the multiple endings are long. I just didn't think the train sequence was that long. They get on the train, they meet Robert Shaw at the first stop, and then it's all the Robert Shaw
scene. I almost felt like the movie could have ended after the train, and like the producers were like, we need some more action in this movie. We had a gypsy fight. We got to put
We need a boat explosion. We need a boat explosion.
Can we get a helicopter?
Give me a helicopter. Give me a boat. Give me like 50 more guys in like black t-shirts.
That's
like,
probably exactly what happened. You know. But still, we got a boat explosion. We got an exploding helicopter. How is that making the movie worse? Come on, guys.
Snooze fest until the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Come on. And I don't know where you get off saying there aren't great locations. That's like
I felt like this movie is very dark. Incredible. Like a lot of it takes place at night, and there's a lot of just like
I mean, when they actually shoot in Hagia Sophia. There's no light.
That's fantastic.
It's all natural light,
it's
which
amazing.
I like.
And the sewers were amazing.
But some people could be like, it's too dark. I can't see it.
Those people are stupid.
They were rats. Yeah.
All right, so let's go to the grading. You guys, we're not doing the zero system?
It.
All right, so we'll start with Matt.
Ooh, I'm going to have to give this quadruple O. Is that four?
Four out of ten.
Oh,
so that's not very good.
That's almost exactly what I was going to say.
That's pretty poo. What's
okay. Here's my little thing. All right. So I read James Bond as like a real good guy, right?
We know.
So like,
you misread James Bond. Go ahead.
So when he walks into his hotel room and the woman's there and she's in the bed already and she's like, you know, I fell in love with your picture from like the file, the dossier or whatever.
Exactly.
And like, let's get down. And like, she's doing weird stuff with like a neck ribbon and like trying to get him into like, you know, like let's get freaky or whatever. To me, the way I read Connery's performance, and it might be totally tied to my subjectivity where I want James Bond to be this like, this heroic kind of character is not like, okay, like I'm down because like, you know, you need to be like getting freaky because I'm like an important government agent. So like, you know, all that. It's just like, he's just like, you know, I'm just trying to like give a little love before the next assassination attempt because you could be trying to kill me too.
Well, he knows that she's potentially lined up against him.
Tio. All right. You didn't answer the question. I got to call you out.
What's the question?
What's the grade of the movie?
Oh, just, yeah, four. Four at a time. No, I think if you, to me, it's like, because of like the way I read it, it's like, if you watch some James Bond movies and you like them, then go back to this one. But if you're not into it yet, skip it.
Oh,
I agree with that sentiment.
I am going to be the lone voice of reason here. And say I can't remember what if I did six or seven last month, but
I think you were six.
I think I was six. I'm gonna go octuple 07. I really enjoyed this one.
Is that an ocho?
Yeah, that's an ocho. Yeah, I gave it the ocho. Here's the thing. I think that this is so for as primitive as Dr. No looked, and I think we cut Dr. No a lot of slack for being the first one and having to invent all this shit.
Yeah.
And I felt like Dr. No was kind of, you know, it was the lowest budget. It was making it up as it goes along. I think it did a pretty good job, but it struggled and I don't think it aged well. This one, on the other hand, I felt like it aged really well. It established a lot of the tropes, not as much as Goldfinger did, but as much as, you know, it made a lot of important steps forward and was a great second entry into the series. I thought Robert Shaw was a great, like, first great henchman role. And I was entertained the entire time. I didn't even notice that it was longer than Dr. No. I really was kind of enwrapped. I did think it had flaws. I thought it had a terrible theme song. I thought it had too many endings. There were problems.
Can I ask you something? Is this maybe about the fact that you're still mad that Quarrel dies?
There are some things that
red shirts.
There are some things that I just am not going to be able to get over, and that's one of them. Yes. But I did enjoy this movie just sort of on the surface. I thought the locations were spectacular. I thought the action was better. I really enjoyed the movie. I had a great time watching it and was surprised at how well it had aged, considering it's the second James Bond movie. They were still figuring a lot of shit out, and it's really old.
Would you issue this movie a license to watch?
I would definitely issue this movie a license to watch. I know you guys disagree, but...
Yeah, see, mine's no. But if you do like... If you get into James Bond, then you go back and watch it. But, like...
Retroactive license
yeah,
to watch.
Yeah, yeah, retroactive license to watch.
Is that what you're granting?
If you're starting from scratch, if you're like, following this podcast...
That's like if you watch it, you'll be acquitted. You don't have the license to watch
If you're
future.
Following this podcast and you're watching along with us, skip this episode. Go to the next one. The next one's much better.
Should we start the whole show with that?
Oh, God. I think that's a...
We should, yeah. Just put that line in the
great,
front.
Yeah, right. Great.
Don't ever skip the podcast because you love it.
We're great podcasteers. This is great.
All right,
we're,
I think we got to sign off.
We're okay.
Yeah, let's get the fuck out of here.
All right, thank you for listening. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns,
here it is.
You can email us at jamesbondcast@gmail.com.
The whole thing?
The whole thing.
Or you can just tell us next time you see us because you're probably one of our friends.
Mom, give me a call.
Dun-ta, dun-ta, dun-ta. Do the song.
So good.
Bond. 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 Name's Bond. James Bond. 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 Name's Bond. James Bond.